Big Sloth.
You sure you're up to this particular murder mission?
Absolutely. Rage and vengeance, anger, loss, regret, they're all tremendous motivators. They really clear the mind, so I'm good to go.
Yeah, but, I mean, this Thanos we're talking about, he's the toughest there is.
Well, he's never fought me.
Yeah, he has.
He's never fought me twice. And I'm getting a new hammer, don't forget.
Well, it better be some hammer.
You know, I'm 1,500 years old. I've killed twice as many enemies as that, and every one of them would have rather killed me, but none succeeded. I'm only alive because fate wants me alive. Thanos is just the latest in a long line of bastards, and he'll be the latest to fill my vengeance. Fate wills it so.
Mm-hmm. And what if you're wrong?
Well, if I'm wrong, then what more could I lose?
Hobo Radio, the official podcast of HoboTrashCan.com. You can share your thoughts on the show anytime by emailing Joel at murphyslaw@hobotrashcan.com.
This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman, and you're listening to Hobo Radio. So stay tuned.
And now, two guys with worse jokes than me, Joel Murphy and Lars.
Hello again. I'm Joel Murphy. This is Hobo Radio. And back with me, my good friend Lars.
Hey, you found me.
I found you. Yeah, you're in a new secret location, an underground bunker, perhaps.
Yeah, I am. Because I'm paranoid that the things that are actually happening might be actually happening.
We don't talk about politics, so I don't know what you're referring to.
I'm not even talking about politics. I'm talking about the statistics of crime in the city I live in.
Oh, no, those are true.
Yeah. And also the irrefutable numbers that have become our climate. You know, standard.
You're one of those. One of those. You believe in climate change.
Okay. We're not going to get into this, but that is for real why I'm in my underground bunker. Anywho, we don't forget our annual tradition. I'll do it this year. You can have the next year. 2019, motherfuckers.
Oh, I get to do 2020. That's exciting.
That is good. That is good. You could say motherfucker in like a Barbara Walters voice.
I have a whole year to work on it.
Yes, you will need that much time.
Yes, and it still won't be good. In a semi-related note, since the last time we did a show, full disclosure, we haven't done a show in 2019. We recorded, I think that was obvious, we talked about Santa Claus in our 500 show, but that was recorded before the new year. So this is the first episode of 2019, and like a lot of people, Molly and I, we've been watching Marie Kondo's show on Netflix. So I just need to let everyone know that, Lars, I held you before the show, and you no longer spark joy for me. So thank you.
Are you letting me go?
I'm letting you go. You taught me about podcasts and how to do them poorly. So thank you.
You're a monster.
You are. Your wife is right. You're a monster.
Well,
no, this
I'm
is.
I'm gonna fold you up very neatly and keep you in our closet.
Yeah, Molly's gonna do a trifold on you, so that, but where you're facing out of our closet and you can look up at us.
I remember it was like two years ago, maybe a little. It was like 2 years ago. I was talking to our friend Jenny in New York, and I said, I said, you know, I read this book, and it really helps you get rid of stuff. I was like, you take a thing, and she goes, "Are you talking about Marie Kondo?" And then, like, for an hour, we just talked about Marie Kondo. She goes, "Of course we both know Marie Kondo." And then that's all it was. And I still haven't watched the show because I was like, I had to leave that obsession behind me. Why would you come out with a show now that I'm clean? You cannot offer me this gift.
No, the show is so good. I love her so much. Like, and it's fascinating. There's a couple things I actually did think we could talk about. One is, God damn it, is Netflix good? And I'm so mad at them because they just raised the prices again, and I'm going to continue to pay them, even though I feel like they should have some sort of tiered system where they look at our account and realize that my wife just mainly watches Frasier, and then occasionally, like, once a month we watch a new show, and, like, could charge us less. Like, we don't need
joy.
Yeah, we don't need all of the content. You know what I mean? Like, you release, like, 30 shows a month. What if, like, we just agree to only watch one new one every month? Like, could we have a discount?
Yeah, I think their response would be, okay, here's what we'll do. We will lower your rates if you can watch Frasier on any other platform.
Yeah,
because
probably.
They got you by the short ones there, man.
But it's
I'm right there with you.
Also, well, we've now branched out and started watching Cheers on Netflix. And do you know who popped up in an episode of Cheers that we watched recently?
Who you got?
A young Kevin Conroy.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, and it was, I like stopped. I made everything, like, I think I freaked Molly out because I was like, whoa, hold on, stop it. Like, because I recognized him right away. He played a baseball player that Carla wanted to jump. Like, he was down for it too, but.
Was he really?
Yeah, but Carla, it was when, spoilers for Cheers, I guess, but yeah. It's the episode where Eddie dies. So she thought she was still married to Eddie, and then he
died. That's later on, huh?
Yeah, no, it was late, but it was definitely Kevin Conroy, like, as the handsome baseball player that she wanted a piece of.
That's cool.
Yeah. I was really excited for it.
That is exciting. You know what? Halfway through that story, I remembered that Kevin Conroy was the voice of Batman in the animated series. When you first said it, I heard Kevin Sorbo.
Oh, that's different. And I wouldn't have been excited for it. No, it was weird because, like, I don't know. I mean, it says everything about me. I was going to say, I don't know what this says about me. But, like, I immediately recognized him. Like, he might not have even spoken yet. And I was Kevin Conroy. I recognize him.
You know what? Kevin Conroy has a very recognizable face.
Yeah, but it's funny because he has a very recognizable face if you're us. Like, you don't see it. Like, he's not.
He has a recognizable face if you have seen his face. He's kind of like, and correct me if I'm wrong, he's like a normal human, a human-looking, There it goes. It's gone. It just left. I knew the name until I had to say it out loud.
Oh, no.
But, yeah, right? The original Hellboy?
Oh, Ron Perlman.
Yeah, he's like a human-looking Ron Perlman.
He's way more handsome than Ron Perlman. I don't want to do that to him.
Hold on. Now, first of all, Ron Perlman, not unattractive ever, but especially in his prime. Okay. But it's just that Ron Perlman has very exaggerated features, like big jaw, big brow, wide barrel-chested, big shoulders.
Well, I mean, and Kevin Conroy has always looked like he could have played Batman in a live-action movie. Like, he's, you know, he happens to be the voice of him, but, like, legit, like, the dude is, you know, he's in good shape. Yeah, he's in good shape, handsome.
He's in good shape.
But it's also funny because his voice is just the Bruce Wayne voice. Like, when he talks, he just sounds like Bruce Wayne. So that's always amazing.
He does. You know, this just sparked my memory on something. So of course we all remember Hercules, The Legendary Journeys.
What is it with you and Kevin Sorbo?
Well, I was just talking about him.
Okay.
So Hercules, The Legendary Journeys, that was the biggest show in the world. It replaced Baywatch as the biggest show in the world. Everyone loved Hercules Legendary Journeys.
You know what? Sorry, just one second. It's kind of reassuring because a lot of times I get, like, really bummed out. And again, we don't get political, but, like, I don't know if hypothetically, like, the most powerful man in the country, like, took a dumb photo of himself in front of a bunch of McDonald's hamburgers and was, like, really proud of himself. Like, that would make me look at it and go, like, we're living in idiocracy. These are stupid times. But, like, thank you for going, like, remember when Hercules replaced Baywatch as the... We've always been stupid. That's reassuring to me. Like,
We've always been dumb. And also, there was some Wendy's there, too, because diversity. So
no, he went to, and I, because they made a big deal that he, the president paid for that food. I want to imagine that he drove around in a limo, not unlike the Simpsons episode with George H.W. Bush. A crusty burger. Like, I hope he went to drive-thrus and got them himself.
Yeah, fucking candelabra. So, Hercules the Legendary Journeys was born from a project that... okay, listen up, kids. There was a network called UPN at one point.
Oh my god, was it? This was 20 years ago, right? Like, I just want you to realize that.
This was like 25 years ago.
25 years ago, yeah.
Yeah. But the thing about it was born of a project that UPN had, which barely flew then. They kind of got lucky, but it would never fly now. It was part of something called the Action Pack. And the Action Pack was every Sunday evening they would air an episode of a different series. And like, you kind of didn't know what you were going to get going into it. Like, the TV guy would just say like Action Pack. And it was basically like, and this was a phrase that you taught me, they were throwing it against the wall to see what stuck. Mm-hmm. And from that, they got the biggest show on planet Earth for its time, which is crazy. Like, not only is it crazy that it worked, but it's crazy that they even tried it.
You know what's funny is the only thing that's even close to that now is Amazon does that in a way where they'll air their pilots like, mm-hmm. and just be like, do you like any of these enough for us to make them a show?
Mm-hmm. But, and sometimes it takes a minute, and I'll say, you know what, we're going to go ahead. And sometimes they're like, holy shit, here's all the money.
That's something that doesn't happen anymore. But during the simpler times in television, you know, like more like the 70s and I think 80s, it was still happening. Back when there were mostly just networks, there wasn't cable, they'd get these pilots made for shows and then they wouldn't pick up the show. So, like, usually on the weekend or whatever, they would just air that pilot as, like, a TV movie and just, like, burn it off. You know what I mean? Just be like, yeah, here's a 2-hour.
I didn't even know that they did that sort of thing.
No, that was like I said.
Because I would think that a pilot would be open-ended, no?
But I don't know if they re-edited them, maybe, to, like, not. But I know that they would do that sometimes. They would just, like, burn off pilots as like TV movies. It's like, I don't know, we made this.
Now, like, the money grab is so ferocious, and they're so scared that something's going to lose money that they'll spend money on something, and then when it doesn't work immediately, it's just in the garbage.
But that was we got away from it. But I actually, the part of the reason I brought up the Marie Kondo thing is like, it hit me because that's been such a really popular thing on social media. But I just saw it and it was like, Netflix is so fucking smart. Like, it's talked a lot about their metrics and the way that they analyze people's viewing habits, but it's like, January 1st, we're going to drop a show about cleaning, because what are people interested in the beginning of the year? Like, people are in that mindset. So here's a TV show that tells you how to clean up your apartment. Like, they know when to release stuff. They know what will hit. And also, I mean, it works that they release a lot of stuff, so, you know, they had probably like 4 or 5 other backup plans if that one didn't resonate. But like, I don't know, they're pretty good at least like one show. Because I felt like that before too, where I kind of get in these phases where I'm like, I don't know if I need to keep Netflix. Like, I want to get rid of this. And then like something new will come out that keeps me going.
Yeah, they are smart like that. And that's why I've always had my subscription since it started. Because like, at first it was like, I couldn't find shit to watch. Oh, look, what's your original series, Lilyhammer? I don't know. I'm not digging it. And I couldn't find anything to watch, but then stuff started dropping. Like, every now and then I'd find something, but now it's just all the time. Now I'm just, you know, first Infinity War drops and then Solo drops. I'm like, well, you guys just, you have me now. You
is
just
Solo
have me.
On
apparently
there?
Solo's on there, man.
God damn it. I didn't even know. That's how much shit they have. I didn't even notice.
Yeah. Well, for some reason it popped up and you might like.
Oh, well, you know, I was just talking about their algorithms, but sometimes they miss. You know? Mine are just cooking shows, and then it's weird, because then sometimes, like, we end up like playing kid shows for Molly's cousins, and then so that like fucks up the algorithm, and then I get like weird. Like,
right. Right.
You might want to watch Doc McStuffins. Well, first of all, I might. I know that show's pretty good, but
and you know, studios would do the same thing in January and February. They would just dump all their bullshit there, and partly in March too. But then at the end of March, they would start being like the summer blockbusters start moving into spring until like the end of March. But really, the dumpster ground for stuff is like we want to be able to put on the jacket title, you know, number one movie in the world, because it was. And, you know, Kangaroo Jack was the number one movie in the world for like 2 weeks running, but it was in January. And just that's what we'll just put those there. It's whatever. Like, it'll make money because people will go see it, but we don't expect big numbers. And then I don't know when. I know the big, the one that really blew everything up was Deadpool a few years back, but now like great movies come out in February, and I don't quite get that because then early March is still kind of a nebulous area, but there's a lot of great shit that happens in February.
Well, I think some of the calculation too was I think some of the shift was December always was a big time to go see movies because in December, you know, like you have that Christmas push. So they'd release really big movies for Christmas. But now, because of the way it works with award season, all of the like prestige movies come out in December, right? Because they want to come out right before the nomination. Or sometimes they'll cheat and they'll have a limited release in December and then like get wide release in January. But I think, so if you have a movie like Deadpool and you're like, well, it's not going to win an Academy Award, then release it in February, because there's nothing else to compete with, and who cares if it's forgotten by the end of the year.
Right, yeah. Let's just be like, this seems good, but it's a rated R superhero movie. I mean, fuck it. Let's just put it there. And you're right, like in in late December, and even, you know, spilling over into January, I guess unless you were worried about the Golden Globe. No, Golden Globes are nominations before then. Anyways, if you want your Oscar nomination, you can still put it out in January. But then, like, the average moviegoer, either one, doesn't want to see your weird fuck-off movie that is weird and fuck-off. Or it's not even playing in a theater anywhere close to them. So you're just like, you know what? Hey, here's whatever the fuck. Here's Glass. We're going to put Glass in January, which I was excited for, and then it's getting horrible reviews. I'll still see it.
Yeah, I still haven't seen, was it Switch? Is that the second in this?
Yeah,
I never saw that one.
Oh, okay. Well, then you won't understand Glass.
I mean, yeah, it's like half of the movie, right?
Also, you probably won't understand Glass, and neither will I.
Man, Shyamalan, that guy, if he had just taken his money to Tahiti after you know, Unbreakable, we'd all still be sitting here going like, when is that guy gonna come back? He was a genius.
Yeah, he's like the Ed Norton of directors, where it's like, whatever you do, I'm gonna be there.
Oh, man. Yeah, and remember like when he slowly kept just putting himself more and more in the movies?
Like, slowly, but then by his fourth movie, he was like a main character?
Yeah, and it wasn't good. That one was so bad. The one where, like, the guy only worked out one of his arms. Was that Lady in the Water? Was that the name of it?
Yeah, exactly.
And he just had a character that was a critic. That was, like...
He was a critic and a writer, and he was like, I've got the chops to be in the same room with Paul Giamatti, who's playing off of a bad script that I wrote.
I mean, in that sense, it's genius that you're making Paul Giamatti look bad enough to belong in the scene with you.
Jesus.
Even like in Signs, a movie that I enjoy that does not hold up at all to any critical thought. Like, if you think about the movie Signs,
don't consider it, just watch it and enjoy it.
But if you stop for even 1 second to contemplate how ridiculous that plot is, it all falls apart.
It does.
But even in that, like, he works pretty well because, one, it feels like his character is in shock. So that's why he's not emoting well.
Right.
And two, it ends with him going, like, also the aliens in my pantry. Right. Anyway, like, which is really exciting. And so you're like, okay, cool, we're going to see that.
Yeah, and there's so many good performances. It's just like the plot falls apart like eating soup with a fork. It's just not. And Michael Showalter's in that, and he's so good, and he's on screen for like 90 seconds, but they talk about his character through the whole movie. So anytime they mention his character's name, you're like, "That's Michael Showalter."
It's also, I mean, like War of the Worlds is pretty brilliant, especially like when you consider the time it came out. That it's smart, like it's this really clever idea of what defeats the aliens is the fact that like they don't have an immune system that can support them right. living here, so like they're right. fucked before they started.
Mm-hmm.
That's clever. It feels like Shyamalan tried to do that, but was like, "Well, I know what will defeat them: 70% of the Earth."
Yes, and not even. I mean, 70% on the surface, right. but then it also comes out of the sky and every living organism.
Right. Yeah. Even the people you kill, like if enough of them got on the alien, would be splattered.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is that it was. The plot was based on the fact that they were doing recon. So, like, Signs is the or the crop circle. So they're doing reconnaissance missions, and they missed that.
Yeah.
So, like, if they just show up, oh, okay, we can deal with that. And then you tell me, like, they're here, and they're fighting people, and people are losing, but then they started to drive them back because of water. Cool. Okay, cool. I can... But it seems like it would happen immediately, especially if they land in someplace humid, but fine, whatever. But... The point is, they've been here, they've been coming here, they're communicating with each other, they're coming up with a plan. It was a bad plan.
Yeah, they really didn't. Like, did any of them just look at Seattle? Like, did they even...
just have yeah, one for of you... real.
Yeah.
Seattle, the UK, Costa Rica, like anywhere, it's all just right, look, it's over.
So we're going to send some reconnaissance. I'm going to put some symbols, some stars and crescent moons and stuff into this this area right here. Oh, okay. What's that area? Well, it's this like, you know, it seems to be some kind of food that grows from the ground. Oh, how does that grow? Well, it seems like... You know, I haven't gotten that far. I don't know. Like, it pops up from the ground. I don't know what it needs to grow, but that's where we're going to put, like, they used crops that have to have water to grow. Yep. That's yep. where they put their messaging.
Yep.
They were yep, bad
like
at it.
If all the signs were in the sand of deserts, then okay. I don't know why you kept picking those spots, but I guess they've only ever been to deserts.
Also, why his daughter had to leave glasses of water around? To stop one alien. I don't... It doesn't. None of it. His wife had to die to tell him to swing a bat, which seems intuitive once you're holding the bat.
It's... Look, those are conceits we make when we want to enjoy a movie. But the other one's... it's a little too big for us to accept.
Yeah. By the way, I want to, since it kind of came up, you know, there was an article that came out, and I won't even give it too much credence by, like, describing it in detail, but it seemed like one of those clickbaity articles that's like, I'm tired of superhero movies, and they're boring, and they're ruining movies, and then they get someone to write that, and then everyone who likes superhero movies reposts it and gets that site traffic by going like, no, they're dumb, and then it's this dumb cycle where... It's manufactured news that, like, was designed to anger you to drive traffic to a site by trolling mm-hmm. you. But with that being said, since it is 2019 and we're motherfuckers, sorry I said it. You didn't say it, so.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, I was busy.
But, you know, like, can we just... I would love to get to a point where we could both view superhero movies as having the potential to be art and also can view artistic movies as being shit. Like, you know?
That's a good point. Expand on that, please.
Okay. Well, so what I find exhausting, because I love superhero movies and there's shit that, you know, they can do where it's... Like, just to be honest, you know, Infinity War or what... Endgame... Avengers Endgame is coming out this year. It's the culmination of 10 years of storytelling, and there's a depth to the characters and the story and the world that is hard to achieve in cinema, and you can mm-hmm. achieve in the most important of prestige dramas. And if this was a TV show, I mean, the budget would be astronomical, but, like, it'd be winning Emmys if it was TV because of the scale. Like, Game of Thrones wins Emmys, which Game of Thrones right. is a schlocky, like, nudity-filled, half the times badly written, you know, epic drama. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. The Avengers, if it was a TV show, we'd be losing our shit over how good it was. But because it's a movie and because it's considered like a blockbuster type movie, it's not like I'm just sitting here. I'm openly saying they haven't announced the Academy Award nominees. I know there's a push for Black Panther. I would be happy to see Black Panther get it. But honestly, for me, Avengers Infinity War should be nominated for Best Picture. Like, I just openly believe that.
It seems like you paused to see how I felt about that.
Yeah.
Now, when you say, here's the problem with Avengers Infinity War, getting that nomination. There was no Ant-Man in Avengers Infinity War.
Oh.
And I'm not saying there had to be. Mm-hmm. All I'm saying is, if they really wanted to secure that sort of prestige.
Oh, like how Clueless won Best Picture.
No, I'm with you. It's reminiscent of Lord of the Rings, how when Return of the King won for Best Picture, everyone knew it was the entire trilogy winning Best Picture.
Yeah.
Like, they couldn't win it every year. It's like everyone has a favorite of those three Lord of the Rings movies. And it's hard to say which one is objectively the best, honestly. Like, but it probably, I don't know. For most people, it probably wouldn't be Return of the King, because Return of the King, while its battle scenes were epic, and it was like, but all the battle scenes were epic. It was as beautiful as any of the movies.
That last hour of Return of the King drags a bit.
The last hour is like, it drags so hard, and it's not bad, but it drags so hard.
Yeah, there's a lot of denouement.
Right. Right, but it's like, I don't know, like, the first one was so good, you know, there's two more coming out, we'll see how it goes. If the third one is as good or better than the first one or the second one, then we'll see, but that's what it was. Yeah, I don't, they have, that's, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head when you say what they have achieved with this movie series is really unparalleled as far as movies goes. No one has dragged on. No one has continued a cinematic universe. We didn't even know what the fuck a cinematic universe was before. No one has continued a series this long and been consistently good the entire time. No one has made characters that have lasted through so many movies that are not only relatable, but so knowable at this point. I mean, there are so many inside jokes that they give to fans, but still able to make a movie like that you can just pop in every once in a while, and you can check out a movie and still understand and enjoy what the hell is going on. It's crazy, and it gets no love. And usually I'm ranting about this when I'm talking about science fiction.
Right.
But it's just incredible. And there are people that watch them and there are people that don't watch them. And some people shit on them, but I'm like, like, you don't have to like them. You don't even have to watch them. But honestly, to say that they're not artistic and they haven't taken, like, they've changed movies forever. And it's not just blockbusters. People go to see good movies that are fun. And I just can't. I don't know. What are we going
to
do?
Well, it's also just to talk about the flip side, because I did introduce both sides of it. And I love, and I mean, the last movie that I saw in the theater, Molly and I went to see The Favorite, which was amazing. I loved that movie. It was really creative and beautiful and had really great performances. And I would also love to see that nominated for Best Picture. Like, it's a really good movie.
Oh, that's the one with Olivia Colman.
Yes. Yeah, Olivia Colman, Emma Stone, and Rachel Weisz. Yeah, it's really good. One. Like, go see it. It's fucking amazing. And it's like, it's a period piece, and it's like a really, like, like witty satire. Like, it's a great movie. I highly recommend it. But like
Olivia Colman is so goddamn good at being serious and making me laugh.
Oh yeah, and she is the only person who could have played the role. Like, it's such a tightrope of like, she has to be likable while being terrible, and while like simultaneously, like, you feel sorry for her and realize that she's the queen and could have anyone destroyed that she wanted to. So like,
yeah,
no, it's a great performance, but my point is, like, that movie is genuinely wonderful, but, like, you get all these movies, and right now there's one that just came out. I don't even remember the name of it, but it's Bryan Cranston and Kevin Hart. And it's like...
Oh, God.
Yeah. And it's, you know, like, it's all, like, a guy in a wheelchair, and, like, they form a friendship. Right. And
unlikely bond.
Yeah, and...
They save each other.
An unlikely bond. Or there's that movie that came out, was a Green Book, where it's, like, it turned out the guy who wrote it, like, had, like, anti-Muslim tweets or whatever. But, like, you know, he wrote this movie about, like, how a white guy teaches a black guy how to eat fried chicken. I don't know what that movie is about.
But you're still... You're just... It's they're still making the magical Negro movie,
but they make but this is what I'm saying. That movie gets made because they know that it'll get awards buzz, and also just to tie it all together, Mr. Ben Affleck, who I like, you know, he started making good movies. But you watch that movie, The Town, and you can see that scene where he's like looking into the distance, and he gives that speech that he probably practiced like 50 times, and he's like, all right, this is the one speech I have to give how I put the posters up looking for my mom, you know, like it's serious. And if I get kind of quiet and I talk about how I went all over town and I couldn't find her, and maybe my voice quivers a little at this point, and then you'll get nominated for... Like, people know how to get nominated for an award, because it's almost like a fucking... You know, they're check boxes to check. Oh, is it about a historical figure? Like, is it about racism, but, like, through the lens of a white person, so that it's not, like, really difficult to deal with? Right. It's not like if Beale Street could talk. Like, it's still, like, come on, you know. We need baby boomer voters to still pick it.
Right.
But I mean, I say that in Moonlight one. So I mean, but still, like, you know what I mean? Like, there's certain kinds of movies that come out.
After
La La Land. Yeah, and La La Land is the movie about Hollywood. Then it's definitely going to get nominated, because Hollywood loves movies about Hollywood. But it's just, you know what I mean? Like, the argument against superhero movies is that they're formulaic and that they're, you know, not high art. And I would just argue that there's nothing more formulaic than like 80% of the prestige dramas that come out every year. Like, I know what they are. Like, if it's a biopic, and again, we lost our shit over Bohemian Rhapsody. I haven't seen that movie, but I know what that movie is, you know? Like, there's a formula to biopics. There's a formula to, like,
this is the fourth race. Time they did A Star Is Born.
Right, A Star Is Born. Yep. Yeah.
I swear to God, if they keep... Like, if everyone keeps going off about how this is beautiful and amazing and it's such a, like, this story will blow your mind. It's the fourth fucking time they've made this exact same movie with the exact same plot. What happens in that movie is the same fucking thing that has happened in all four of those movies. God damn it.
Can I just say that I think it's important now that, that if Molly has an opinion, you should let her speak it.
Yeah. No, do you want
because
to be on
the mic? I think she's been in silence too long. And could you look something up for me right now? I'm just not in a position to do it.
Yeah.
Could you look up for me the movie that won Best Live Action Short last year?
Okay, best live action short last year.
Because I can tell you the best animated short that won last year was the Kobe Bryant one.
Oh, and
It checked all of the goddamn boxes. First, epic score written by John Williams. Secondly, it was very artistically animated. It was kind of like the Aha video.
The Silent Child?
Yeah, I knew it was.
Cast a deaf girl.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And that's the thing. It was about a young girl with disabilities who came from a family that wasn't treating her well. And there was a caretaker who saw the spark in her and loved her, but then took her away and like wouldn't let the caretaker near her. And this all happened within a short. I mean, this is like, you know, I don't know how long they have to be, but I want to say that was like 10 minutes long. And both of them checked all the fucking boxes. And I can tell you, I saw every nominee in both categories, and both of those are the weakest. I texted.
Oh, that's right. You went to like that screening. I remember that you like went to the theater.
I sat next to Pat and watched all of these things. And when that happened, I sent him, it was an all caps text rant of like, are you fucking kidding me? They were the worst of both categories. I shouldn't say worst, but they were the ones
laziest, maybe.
Maybe the laziest. I mean, the live action was, it actually was really gorgeous, but the other ones were, they took so many chances.
Yeah.
And they kind of twisted something up inside of me, for lack of a better way to describe it. And the animated ones, that one was such utter horseshit. It was like it was so stupid. Like, yes, it was well made, but the basis of it is so goddamn dumb, especially when you look at what the other ones did. Anyways, you guys should go watch those. But you're right. Those things did exactly what you said, where they were just going down a checklist. What do we have to do?
Yeah, but it's just, I mean, it's just this bias that like really stands out to me of, you know, and I'm, again, like, I feel like people have this fear that, like, we're going to open the door and, you know, a Michael Bay Transformers movie is going to win Best Picture, which isn't going to happen. But also, even if it did, that's probably still not even the worst thing that would, like, it's not the worst movie to ever win Best Picture. You know, there's been some terrible ones. I mean, we gave it to Forrest Gump. Do we really need to pretend like there's a high standard for this award?
Yeah, American Beauty.
Right. Yeah, and that guy sucks. Like, we know that now. Like, so that's what's great is, like, history's on our side now to just talk all kinds of shit about American Beauty. Like,
let's do it. You ever seen a musical movie called Oliver? Because there's an exclamation mark. But, yeah, it's not good.
But, yeah, and to Molly's point, yeah, they've made A Star Is Born four times, but we get knocked because, like, you know, superhero movies are formulaic. But, like, it's good, but also, yeah, maybe, you know, maybe Captain Marvel will follow a formula that, like, all these Iron Man and everything else is hit. But, like, there isn't a formula to Infinity War. We've never had a movie like that. Like, you know what I mean? It's a huge ensemble thing. And also, you know, to bring up the Ben Affleck thing, the point that I want to make is, like, if you're an actor and you're pretty good at it, like, you can hit the overly wrought, like pure emotion, like heartstrings moment that is designed in these like prestige dramas. Like it's, you know what I mean? You know, the speech that was written to be the clip that's going to get you nominated and you practice that one a bunch and then you do it. I just want to point out that like sincerely, Chris Hemsworth was on a spaceship with a CGI raccoon and has a speech in Infinity War that I think about all the time when he like has this weird moment of vulnerability and says, you know, like I'm gonna defeat this guy, and you know Rocket's like, well, what if you're wrong? And he's like, well, then we're all fucked. And it's like this immortal god contemplating his mortality and the fact that this might be the time it doesn't work in a world where in the last movie it was directed by Taika Waititi and the world is ridiculous and he's making jokes every 5 seconds. Like the fact that that guy's that shaken, I'm like, holy shit, this is terrifying. Like this is actually bad. There are huge stakes to this. Like the handsome chiseled man with one eye just like made me get choked up in this movie. Like that's harder to do. He said that in front of a green screen to most likely fucking James Gunn's brother in a suit with like little ping pong balls glued to it.
Right.
Sean Gunn. I blanked on Sean Gunn's name for a moment.
No, it's cool. But yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And I listened to that that Marin interview that James Brolin did. Josh. Josh
how can you not remember his name? It's in every marquee every 3 months.
You're in all my movies. Stop it. So he, like, I know Josh Brolin has a checkered past, and I'm not saying he's the epitome of an actor. What I'm saying is Josh Brolin takes what he does very seriously. He talked a lot about when he was in True West with Elias Koteas and all this. Like he thinks of himself as a craft actor, if you will. I'm not saying that's incorrect or correct. I'm just saying that's how he thinks of himself. But when he was asked about these superhero movies, because he was in two of the biggest ones this year, he said, look, this is legit. You have to work to make this happen. And there's a lot of shit that you have to do that seems ridiculous. You're standing in front of the screen, you're wearing prosthetics, and like you're doing this choreography and stuff. But when it comes to the acting, like you really have to act. This isn't a, you know, it's fun, but it's not a joke.
Yeah.
Like you really like you have to work your ass off because people care so much about these characters and there's so much there's so much base that you're working off of that you really want to pay homage to it, not only because the fans are watching so closely, but because like it's a really good character.
But yeah, and I think that's what Nolan did. I want to say first, but someone could probably quibble with that. But like, I think Nolan made that a priority, and then Marvel kind of followed up on that of like, no, we're going to cast really good actors and we're going to treat this like it's real. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to be treated like any other project. Like, I'm Christopher Nolan. If I'm not making this, I am making some. And that's what's funny. Nolan made three Batman movies that, because they were Batman movies, didn't get nominated when, like, everything else he directs does. What do you think he did a shittier job? Like, you just didn't like the source material. Like, it's not like they were less, you know what I mean? He didn't phone it in. Right. He made the same type of movie he always makes. It just had a guy in a Batman suit in it, you know?
Yes. Yes. That. And, but then, because there's an anniversary, they will pay homage to James Bond. And those movies have never been awesome.
No, and like, those movies, so yeah,
like, they, I've seen,
even
listen,
the ones they take seriously aren't, like, Casino Royale's not even good, really. Like,
yeah, let me tell you that I've seen every one of those movies. I've seen the Sean Connery ones multiple times. I've seen most of them multiple times, but definitely the Sean Connery ones. And I can tell you that, like, while they are great fun and I love those movies, they're not great. They're ridiculous. Yes. Every single one is ridiculous. Even when it got dark and gritty, it's the same fucking thing, only now James Bond isn't smiling and making butt jokes. It's still the same thing. It doesn't make any fucking sense.
Yeah.
But still, it's like, well, we'll hold James Bond in high regard because it obeys the laws of physics some of the times.
Except that one where they went to the moon or whatever. Like, Jesus.
That's Moonraker.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Moonraker that had the villain was Jaws, which is a big guy who had teeth that could bend metal.
Oh, man. Yeah, no, it's just, that's like my personal pet peeve, but like, I'm just tired of it. I'm tired of like, you don't get to be sophisticated, because I like both, you know, big budget superhero movies, and I like prestige dramas that are deemed important, and this idea that, like, because something is in one category and not the other, like, automatically makes it something. Like, you can make the best, like, most artistic superhero movie ever, or you can make the shittiest, dumbest artistic movie ever. Those are both possibilities. Like, something isn't good just because of its genre.
You're absolutely right. No one has a problem with calling something Oscar bait.
Yeah.
But then, you know, when a superhero or a science fiction movie isn't nominated in artistic categories, or, you know, like perceived artistic categories, not to say the technical ones aren't also artistic, but these artistic categories, they say, well, of course they aren't, because it's a dumb superhero movie. It's just a crazy action science fiction movie. So who cares? I'm like, well, how come that's accepted? That's just accepted that the King's Speech, when the first trailer you saw for the King's Speech, you say, that's going to win Oscars. That's totally Oscar bait. And then when it does, everyone's like, of course it did. It's an awesome movie. I'm not saying it's a bad movie, but it was made to win the Oscars. And then it won the Oscars and everyone's fine with it.
Well, it's also like, you know, I think there's superhero movies and sci-fi movies and things like that actually have more power to like shape people and to make you, because here's the thing, if you make an important movie that's about something important, you know, if you make The Post and it's about how important newspapers are or whatever, like, the audience is going to see that is smaller than, like, you know, if you make, you know, Thor Ragnarok or whatever, like, there's a lot more people are going to see that. If you can embed, like, again, not be heavy handed, but again, like, you have something like Captain America Civil War that's like questioning the government and like just blindly signing treaties and believing people in power. Like, there are some heavy themes in there that people will like go to pay money to see that movie and enjoy. And who knows? I'm not saying that it'll change their heart or mind or that they'll even absorb that that's what they saw, but I am telling you that those people wouldn't have even had those themes like in front of them otherwise. Like, you know what I mean? You can make X-Men and it can be about bigotry and hatred and get people to question that stuff and in ways that they might not even realize that's a much more subtle, like, easing them into versus, like, go watch this important, go watch. Which do you think movie had more impact on people thinking about, like, bigotry and hatred? The movie Crash or the, like, any of the X-Men movies?
Right. Yeah, and it's not... is not being forced down your throat.
Right. It's just part of the movie. And it helps, especially for younger people or you know, people who maybe live somewhere that they aren't exposed to these kind of ideas. Like, it teaches you empathy and it teaches you to think about a broader world. Like, I think there is a real power to movies, but it's like that spoonful of sugar kind of thing. Like, you can't, if you set out to make an important movie, it's probably going to get less traction for the people that need to hear it than if you make a movie that everyone wants to see that sneaks in an important message, you know?
Right. No, absolutely. I mean, it's like I equate the entire idea of the X-Men. I equate it to George Orwell's Animal Farm.
Mm-hmm.
In that, yeah, on the base, it's a silly story about some animals on a farm that overthrow their captors, and then they kind of like are trying to build their own society and they're trying to be equal. And like, I'm not an English teacher. You all went through this class, hopefully. I don't want any young people listening to this. We all had to read it. We all know what it's about. It's fucking communism and shit like that. And then yeah, but then you know, and then it's like, well, X-Men is just, you know, fun superhero nonsense, but it's like, it's the same things. It's discriminating against. I mean, if you tell me that X-Men is not neo-McCarthyism, then you haven't seen the first movie, which isn't even the best movie.
No.
It's the same fucking thing. It's discrimination. It's like all these things where it's like, it's not even political. It's just base human shit of like this not only could happen, but it's happening, and that we're approaching it from a different way and also making it fun and actiony and look at all these special effects. Like, what the hell is there not to like?
Yeah, no, I'm like, it drives me crazy. But well, hey, like we, you know, it's a new year. Let's try to change gears a little bit. I know, okay. I believe you had something, you know, we're not just going to keep doing this like movie pop culture thing. So let's shift gears. I know there's something else you wanted to address and I wanted to give you a chance. Something a little more important, I thought, right? This is a little higher brow.
There was. And this is, I wanted to speak to everyone about something I suffer from, and that is an allergy to dust mites. Now,
thank God you finally have the strength. Okay.
If you did or did not know, most of the dust that we experience every day is actually the skin that we shed from our bodies, which is gross, but it, like, if you didn't know that.
Oh, I'm sorry. God.
What is that? What's happening?
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I wish we had time for this important segment, but that's my Ghostbusters alarm. I said it.
Oh no.
Yeah,
oh,
I'm sorry. No. Like, I wish I could just turn it off, no. But I get, you know, once it starts.
Okay. Once you it can starts, snooze it. You can snooze it.
Okay. Sorry. I wish we could do it, but you know, Ghostbusters.
I almost, you know, I you know, I rarely
Oh man.
I rarely make an appearance on social media. I almost posted something recently that was going to be very controversial.
Oh.
And because I like to keep my opinions to myself most of the time, I didn't post it, but I wanted to say it's such a huge part of not only my childhood, but my whole life. Can we please just stop? It's over. Like, we can't do it anymore. No. We need to wait. It's one of those things where it's like, we have to wait for everyone who loves it to die. Then maybe future generations can have the same joy that we did.
Oh, man. No, I watched that whole dumb teaser, too. And I made, like... It's just like, I feel nothing. Like, maybe this is what we need to all move on. Like, it's exposure therapy. Like, maybe we all have the breakthrough. And once you realize that Ghostbusters doesn't mean anything.
It doesn't. If you, maybe, because this is pretty, well, next, like, in the last couple days, pretty new information. So you want to explain to everyone what's going on?
Oh, well, yeah. So there was a film in the 1980s.
Oh, you don't have to start there. Oh,
okay. Okay. So, it did
the year,
well.
1976.
That
the
man.
Show, Saturday Night Live.
That movie did, I'll skip ahead, that movie did really well, so they made a sequel.
Uh-huh.
Which is great. We all loved it. It's not.
I will defend Ghostbusters 2 with the yogurt stain until the bitter end.
I love Ghostbusters 2. I really do.
With the yogurt stain.
Yeah. But yeah, so they made two Ghostbusters movies. They were enjoyable. The kind of surprise hits. It's a little baffling how successful Ghostbusters was. It was a hastily written movie with some really powerful comedians in it that captured a nation for some reason.
Really, it was some really big casting changes that happened sort of last minute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Eddie Murphy was cut out of that movie, and so they gave Ernie Hudson his part but cut all his lines. Yet still, I've always been in this camp, and I know a lot of people are, still fucking love Winston. Winston's a good, despite their best efforts to bury that character, he's amazing.
He is. Thank you, Ernie Hudson.
Yeah, no, Ernie Hudson nailed it. But yeah, those movies did really well. And then at some point, you know, like many in his generation, Dan Aykroyd aged and became bitter and like, you know, angry and resentful and decided to destroy all the things he had once created.
He did. And look,
he made
I don't...
vodka within a skull. For some reason,
he did. He put vodka in a skull. And look, I don't ever criticize anyone if they believe in ghosts. But you can believe in ghosts too hard.
Yeah,
sometimes you can believe in them too hard.
Also, you know, I struggle a lot, and I know many of us do, to really like place Dan Aykroyd in his proper place in comedy history. I am probably guilty of putting him lower than he deserves. He was a, you know, original cast member of Saturday Night Live. He's been involved in some truly great projects. But wherever I am on the spectrum, I think it's safe to say that Dan Aykroyd is on the other end of that spectrum and thinks that Dan Aykroyd is a huge selling point.
Right.
And so he believed, and I think it's fair to say erroneously, I think history is on my side on this, that the Blues Brothers worked with him and anyone else. That it wasn't... That having Dan Aykroyd involved in a Blues Brothers movie was really the selling point. So
Dan Aykroyd was involved in so many projects that were not only huge successes, but legendary.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to look to the person next to him, on either side of him. And you tell me. You tell me who did that.
But his particular obsession for quite some time has been to revive the Ghostbusters franchise, and he's really believed in that, and so this has come from time to time. There's rumors of scripts and projects and in various forms of development, and then of course, and I god damn it, I don't even want to bring it up except the alarm went off, so we have no choice, but they made another Ghostbusters movie. You guys might have heard about it. It had four very talented female comedians in it. It was okay. Everyone lost their goddamn mind when it came out.
They lost their mind. And we thought it was, we thought the worst of it was going to be, they remember they mentioned it to Ernie Hudson on the fly.
Yeah,
like he was at something or somewhere, and they mentioned it to him before any of us really had any firm grasp that this was actually going to be a movie. And he caught a lot of shit because he said, that sounds sexy. He said a lot of other things, but he caught some shit for saying it sounds sexy. It was like, what, just because they're girls are going to be sexy? Well, first of all, this was just like a train of thought that was coming out of his mind, a stream of consciousness. Yeah. Of yeah. Just like, secondly, he wasn't wrong with the idea that ladies dressed as Ghostbusters would be sexy. Also,
Kay McKinnon single-handedly led a sexual revolution in that movie.
Right? Her and Leslie Jones.
And Leslie Jones. But, well, Leslie Jones is always leading a sexual revolution.
You know what? That's fair. And then when it came down to it, I don't know if you guys have seen this movie, but he was right. Like, he was right about the whole thing. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not going to go into all of the opinions, but it was a fun enough movie. But yeah, it was sexy. Like, mm-hmm. ladies as Ghostbusters is sexy. Mm-hmm. Men as Ghostbusters is sexy, but then ladies as Ghostbusters is extra sexy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, who knew that, like, brown jumpsuits, like, really work for everybody?
Yeah. Keep that tone color neutral, mm-hmm. and then build up everything else, and have some fun with the hair, have some fun with the proton packs. There's going to be all kinds of colors going around. Yeah. This is all super sexy to me.
I will say my one knock on Ghostbusters 2.
Okay.
I was waiting. Ghostbusters 2.
With the yogurt stain.
Okay. I didn't like the uniforms as much. The blue, like when they switched to like different color. It wasn't as good.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
but anyway, that's neither here nor there. Mm-hmm, anyway, so they made that movie. It was fine. Yeah, it was. It didn't deserve the amount of energy everyone put into it. Is really about the most like that I'll say. It's fine. It's a perfectly fine movie.
It's fine.
But anyway, so then I don't know, for some reason in secret, they've also now been developing this new Ghostbusters movie, and it's going to be out in next year. And they released a teaser for it. And the teaser, if you haven't seen it, it's just the Ghostbusters music and a very long, pointless tease to show you the car. It's about as good as the car's under a tarp in a shack, and the camera's very slowly panning towards it. And then the car is there. The car is going to be in the movie. So if you were worried that the Ecto-1 wasn't going to be in it. Here's the problem with that, though. I was never worried that Ecto-1 isn't going to be in it. This is what I'm worried.
Always in it.
This is what I'm worried that isn't going to be in it. I'm worried that Harold Ramis isn't going to be in it.
I mean, those worries aren't unfounded.
Yeah.
But we don't know for sure.
I'm worried that Bill Murray isn't going to be in it.
We're not unfounded.
I mean,
you're also not sure.
I'm worried that Dan Aykroyd is going to be in it.
That is a legit worry.
And perhaps that Ghost will continue to fillet him from the first movie.
Here's what I'm worried about.
Okay.
Is that I'm worried that Ernie Hudson will definitely be in it.
Yeah. I mean, I love Ernie Hudson, but it's not.
Yeah, me too. But like, why isn't he in more shit?
That's a good question.
I've never been disappointed by this man on screen.
No.
Ever.
Also, he has a lot of really good lines in that first Ghostbusters movie. Just want to point that out.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And also, hey, you guys. I don't know if you play a lot of crosswords or not, but his name is Winston Zeddemore.
Mm-hmm.
Zeddemore often comes up.
Yeah.
In the crosswords.
Also, is Ms. Annie Potts, is she being brought back?
You know what? That's a good question. I don't even know what Annie Potts has been up to. Is she on like a USA something that's doing very well and she is living a good life? That's what I hope.
We're going to have to assume that she is. She's on Suits. I'm just going to say she's on Suits.
Is she on Suits?
Is that show even still on?
Is she Rizzoli or Isles?
It's, you know, anyone could be. honestly.
All I know, those shows make people happy, so I'm glad. I have no idea what they are.
I know that she's not Franklin or Bash, because one of those is Mark Paul Gosselaar.
Okay.
I know that to be true. But she could be the other one. If he's Franklin, she could be Bash, for all I know.
She could be Bash. She seems like a Bash.
No, but I don't want to talk about it, but like, God, this is stop. I have no excitement. I don't want to see this movie. I don't want to see any Ghostbusters. Bustin' makes me feel good.
Oh, God.
Continue.
We didn't have a lot of prep time to do this show, but I almost said, can we please never talk about Ghostbusters ever again? I only have a feeling, because you've just introduced it, that I'm going to be hearing this alarm again.
It's out of my control. It's the alarm. If I had any control over the alarm, I wanted to hear about your dust mites. Unfortunately, now we're out of time.
I'm pretty sure that you said, I set the alarm. So I have no control over when it goes off? What is that?
Have you never seen a science fiction movie? It's out of my hands now. It's become sentient.
Oh my God.
It scans the internet.
You set it once and then it just starts to listen. It's like Facebook and Google.
Yeah. I also, for reals though, we're almost out of time, but I do want to talk about something briefly that I would like to thank. I was very kindly invited out to enjoy a 4DX movie experience last year, and I haven't had a chance to talk about it, but it was a very cool thing where I'm trying to look at my email to see if there's a specific company I need to thank, but it was it was in downtown LA. It was near the Staples Center, this theater. It's 4Dplex, the world's leading cinema company. Okay. But they invited me. I saw Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse in 4D. That movie's great. And they were very nice for inviting me. If you don't know 4DX, it's like, I don't know. Did you ever do the Back to the Future ride at Universal Studios or the?
No, I did the Days of Thunder ride.
Days of Thunder, like it's that
at
kind of thing.
King's
where
Dominion.
Yeah, it's like that kind of thing. The seats move, like they're kind of synced to the screen, you know. And it's meant to be like a more immersive experience. Beautiful screen, obviously, and there's different, like they blow smoke. There's a lot of like effects. It was a neat thing. I will just say, in the interest of full disclosure, I am an old man, and it was too much for me. I am old-fashioned.
I just want to sit here. Why is it moving around? I can't doze off.
I just want to watch my Spider-Man in a seat that doesn't move. But no, it was genuinely an interesting experience, and they were very kind to invite me out. So I wanted to make sure to mention that and let people know that that is a thing, and if you're young and cool, that you should try it.
Yeah, man, listen, like, I know we're trying to wrap things up, and this movie came out a minute ago. We don't have to go into it. There's nothing even to go into except to say that Into the Spider-Verse is the best Spider-Man movie since Spider-Man 2. It's right up there. But here's the thing. We talked on this show extensively about how it's great that we got this Miles Morales. It's great that they're updating Spider-Man. Just to, like, you know, they're shaking it up. They're bringing it to the new kids. Like, these kids should experience the same thing that those other kids experienced that we really didn't even get to experience with, like, something that relates to them. That's like a modern New York. It was fantastic. And then I see this, trailer yesterday for the new, MCU Spider-Man movie. And what song do I hear? I Wanna Be Sedated, which is a song that it kind of timeless. Like, I'm not shitting on that song, but like, this is what the fuck we're talking about. This is what we're talking about. Yes. Oh yes. They are from New York. Yes. That's a good song. Yes. It can kind of relate to whatever the fuck's happened in Peter Parker's life, but this is what the fuck we're talking about. Instead of Beastie Boys, we've gone even further back now.
Well, and that was, I remember ranting about that on this very show. I love Homecoming. That movie's really delightful. It's a really good Spider-Man movie. You're probably right that it's probably third if we're ranking the Spider-Mans, because I also fucking loved Into the Spider-Verse. But I liked Homecoming, but yeah, that's the biggest knock, that all that movie is, it's nothing but like songs from 20 to 30 years, well, 30 to 40 years ago, probably.
Right.
Like it's all these, like, it felt like an executive being like it's very Seymour Skinner. No, the children are wrong. Like, right. And that's what I did. Like, there's so many things I loved about Into the Spider-Verse, but also, one, these movies are made by Sony. You're Sony. You're a music company.
Right.
And I loved Into the Spider-Verse because that soundtrack is really fucking good. And it's all new music. And it's like, it's like really cool stuff. And it fit. And also, like, I'm glad that someone with that movie realized that if it had the Ramones playing, you'd be like, come on.
That can give me a goddamn break.
But yeah, it's that I also, while we're at it, that Far From Home, it looked interesting, but also you're creating, and this, it drove me crazy with the Sam Raimi Spider-Man's with the yogurt stain. that Spider-Man couldn't keep his mask on for more than 5 seconds. It's just constantly just mask off to anyone in New York who wanted to see his face. This Spider-Man has his own problem, which is like, you think they're not going to be able to piece together that every school trip that Peter Parker goes on, Spider-Man shows up while Peter Parker disappeared?
Going all over the fucking place. Like, yeah. especially the people that are on the trip with him. Everywhere, everywhere we go, Spider-Man is there and Peter Parker is not.
Yeah, and there's like 10 of us in this group. Like, it's a small group. I'm curious to see how they handle that, because that to me seems like a pretty glaring problem that they're creating for themselves. But also, one last thing I want to say about Into the Spider-Verse, just because it's funny to me. I don't know a lot about Miles Morales' Spider-Man. That was after my time. I haven't read much with him in it. But so I didn't really piece together that the character that Donald Glover is playing in Homecoming is the same character that Mahershala Ali is playing in Into the Spider-Verse. And all I'll really say is that that's a very different portrayals of that character.
It's a different interpretation.
Yeah, they're very different interpretations. I never would have made that. I think someone else pointed it out to me, because I never would have been like, he was playing that guy? Like, that's who Donald Glover was playing?
I only saw it because I was reading about the movie after I saw it, because I thought it was so perfect for what it was trying to be.
And Mahershala Ali.
Yeah, then nuts.
To go back to, like, and again, it's an animated movie, but Mahershala Ali in that fucking movie, like, gets me, man. Like, he's really good and just nails that character. And even though, like, the tropes are familiar that they hit, like, he does it so well that it really worked. And then, like, I was like, wait, that's the guy that Donald Glover is playing with. They're like, you gotta get better at this. That guy?
Yeah. The guy with
the ice cream.
No facial expressions. Yeah, that was him. I'll tell you what. Donald Glover, when they were talking about him being Spider-Man, would have been that. He would have been that. He would have been that Miles Morales.
Yeah.
He would have been the smart, goofy Miles Morales. But I don't think he wants to be that anymore.
No, and I miss it. That's all. But he would have been great. He would have probably, you know, been really good at voicing. Who did voice Miles Morales? That's a good, I don't know who did that.
Oh, it was a young man I don't think I've ever heard of before, as a matter of fact.
But yeah, he did a really good job. Everyone's good. Jake Johnson is fucking great in that movie, too. I can't say enough good things.
Nicolas Cage. It's the best thing he's done in years.
Yeah, no, everyone in that movie nails their parts, and it's really enjoyable.
It's so great.
Yeah, it was great. We have a friend, a mutual friend, Mike, who posted on Facebook. He had like a list of movies, and he was like, what should I see? And I know Bohemian Rhapsody was on there. I forget what else was on, but Spider-Man was on there. And I was very happy that me and everyone, it was like overwhelmingly like 90%. Just like, Spider-Verse, see it.
Yep, do it.
Yeah,
do it.
Movie's real good. But I think that's going to do it.
Yeah. Did we miss any of the nerd movie TV shit?
We'll get to your dust mites next week.
Okay, we'll do that.
So remember, question everything.
I'm not doing this anymore.
aktiv in einer Bar. Mitten in der Wüste lässt sich, stand sie da. Die Männer sahen ihre Brüste. Es war tief in einer Bar. Der Senorita. Gestalten. Sie kamen in die Bar. Und da kamen zwei Gestalten zu der Senorita. Und da kamen zwei Gestalten und tranken Tequila. Oh, Senorita. Chiama la polizia, bevida o tequila, loco de alegría. Oh, señorita, policía, wunderbar. An der Theke lässt sich dann sie da. Und sie rauchte Zigarette und trank Tequila. Lässt sich dann sie an der Theke, die Senorita. Oh, Senorita. Chiama la polizia, bevida o tequila, loco de alegría. Oh, señorita, policía, wunderbar.
Hobo Radio is a production of HoboTrashCan.com. If you enjoyed the show, please rate or review it on iTunes. Hear more great shows on the Peak Sloth Podcast Network, like this one.
This is Joe.
And this is Chris
from the Curioso Podcast.
You are currently listening to The Hobo Radio.
Joe, do hobos listen to Hobo Radio?
I think so. They have one in their stick and bindle, right?
That's called a bindle stiff, sir.
Bindle stiff.
And you know what? If you listen to The Curioso, you will get to know things like that. Because we talk about the weird, the strange, the bizarre, and sometimes the mundane that you just don't know.
So enjoy your two hobos, but you can catch us
at thecurioso.com
on the Peak Sloth Podcast Network.
Nicolas Cage wants you to.